turn and face this way, please. Marie.
I would like to share a content fee, a process fee.
Okay.
But I want to make sure I'm not going to derail the workshop or anything.
I'll make sure you don't derail
because it's a little bit heavy, but it's kind of like I'm self-facilitating myself, so I'm not thinking in it.
It's feeling relevant.
Yeah, it does. And I thought, you know, since there's a room full of facilitators here, what better audience?
Yes. I'm sensing it might be right on topic. We'll see.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about difficult facilitation today.
Yes, and the internal process of what's happening for us as a facilitator.
Okay, that's good.
So thank you. I'll just put my little.
Well, I got to see. First of all, I got to see something about it yesterday that I hadn't been able to see before so clearly while I'm at the monastery because self-hate didn't come in to take away my ability to watch it even while it was happening.
Wow.
And so it was really powerful, you know, because like, it was sort of like the facilitator was watching it. Because it seemed like it happened when the open air thing, it started with open air because as soon as I realized, well, I kind of knew when I saw the schedule, we're probably going to be the open air update people.
What's this be on time business?
Yeah, I was like, well, okay, I know what's up. So I had a little bit of extra time to think about it. And but then when the topic was said, I automatically went blank. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't do any peace practices. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, you know, as much as I come to the monastery, you know, it seems like this is probably not true. But
I think there's something in my life I'm practicing that doesn't do any peace.
Total blank, you know. So even the person was right next to me was sharing, and I'm still total blank. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what do I need right now? And it's like to breathe, you know, so I just said a body thing.
Yeah.
And then I could tell, you know, now something's happened. Mm. You know, like, that process has kicked in. Mm. And so then last night, even when we were doing the exercise, so I was having even trouble doing the exercise because I knew. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, this visibility thing, it's like, there's no information. You know, it's...
There's no information.
Yeah. It's like, I can't know anything because I might say something. And so when we got in the little groups... I was even having a lot of trouble even sharing a process. And I mean, I kind of had to make it up. I mean, it's kind of like, what could you say about process about this? Mm-hmm. And I noticed while I was even trying to say that, I remember at one point I said a sentence that didn't make any sense at all because I was watching the facilitator going, what is she going to do with that?
So you were the person sharing, and you said something that to you didn't make any sense at all, and you watched yourself wonder, what's the facilitator?
Yeah, I said, what is this kind of facilitating?
I'm glad I'm not facilitating this person. Right.
But then, and so, you know, I knew I was probably not going to be able to show up very much as a facilitator because I could tell I just wasn't in that place. But, you know, I want to be here and I want to participate. And so I thought, well, you know, the only way I'm going to get through this is to allow that to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just be willing for that to happen.
Yeah, literally the only way through this is through this. There's no way around it.
Right. Yeah. And so if it's here, it's probably the best time to facilitate. Yeah. So, you know, just go ahead and have that experience.
Yeah. Because this is the thing that conditioning will always want to threaten me with. Well, but what if when it's my turn to get on the cushion, what if I'm in this space? And if we don't prove to ourselves that that's okay, which I think is what you were talking about later on, then,
Yeah, and so it was kind of interesting because I was, it's funny, I didn't feel like I was there as a facilitator, but I was there as the watcher of the facilitator because, you know, I kind of lost what was said, and this person said this whole long thing, and I, you know, it wasn't so much that I lost it, it's that I also kind of went into, oh my God, I'm going to have to just say, I don't even know what you said. and you know, there's a time when I'm in facilitator mode that I can say that, and it would be lighthearted and funny and okay, but this was serious, you know. It's like, all of a sudden, everything is so serious, you know.
And it's funny, too, because I happen to have been there, and I know that the person that you were facilitating realized also that they were going on and on.
Yeah, and it's funny because I don't know what I reflected back. I was able to pull a little bit together, and he really went, you know, really, and so I'm like, okay, so far so good.
Exactly.
He really lit up like I really said something. But I was still in my process, and so, you know, I was feeling so strained, and it's that thing in facilitation. I mean, to me, that's one of the things I love about facilitation is it's instant feedback.
Yes.
And that level of strain I had, I could see it moving to him and his sharing, you know, and it was like we were both kind of doing it seemed like. Mm. And it was interesting to see that, but the process piece I wanted to share, which is a little bit kind of heavy, but you know, I was thinking about it later, and thinking about what's that all about, and I was thinking I wanted to share about it because I don't really quite know how to work with it, mm-hmm. and because of the whole visibility thing, my tendency would be to figure it out by myself and not share about it.
Kind of not wanting to expose the vulnerability of not being sure. Like, let me go back by myself. Figure this out.
Well, no, it's more like, let's just keep this whole thing under the radar.
The whole thing under the radar.
Yeah, and so I feel funny about sharing this piece, but I was kind of looking at that and kind of remembering why that happened. I know I'm going to cry if I say this. In my family, mm-hmm. when I was, I think, 3 and a half, a younger brother was born, and there was a older male relative in my house that I sort of became his target. Mm. And at the same time, it was a sexual thing. Mm-hmm. And I think my mother knew what was going on, and so at the same time, it's kind of like she went into this total rage kind of rejection thing. Mm. And so I spent... Mm. all of my time trying to stay under the radar, because if I attracted either of those people's attention,
right.
it was like my world kind of came to an end. Mm-hmm. And, what I was seeing about it was that, that process was really took care of me at a point in my life. You know, it was really important to take care of me.
Yep, it was really intelligent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I guess I've never been able to really see the kindness in it before.
Yeah.
And just to know that it's not for a little reason that it's there.
Right.
And mm-hmm. just to, have a little more space in letting that be here if it has to be here.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That it's really, really big. That it's really, really... So there's a... This gets triggered. All of this stuff gets triggered, and to really realize that for someone, that's an extremely challenging place to be.
Yeah, and it's really a strong process because it was so crucial to my survival.
Yeah,
it was so necessary, mm-hmm. and of course now it gets applied when it's not necessary.
Right.
And being here, it gets so familial feeling.
Yep.
I mean, not so much in story wise, but it's just kind of a just on some level, it feels like, oh my God, something.
And well, it's almost like, in order, what we're all doing is we're working with all the karma, if you will, that's inside of this person.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to really do that is to have it be triggered. And so it's almost like the system, you could say, like, life helps us in that by having us project all that stuff onto whoever it is that we're around.
Yeah, but I guess because I've done so much work on that kind of stuff, it's not even stories.
No.
It's just like, all of a sudden, I don't really remember.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, I don't have any information, so I can't show up. Because the way it does it is it steals anything I could say from, it's like, all of a sudden, I don't do a peace practice.
Yep.
Or, like last night, it just fascinated me because, ask even my husband if I like to talk about process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually at a loss for words to talk about process. Right. And there I was going, I don't see anything about process.
Yeah.
And for years I would believe that, and then I'd go into self-hate because I don't see anything about process and get all, in this long thing real far away from what was going on.
Yeah.
But, I thought, okay, that's not it's not about the content that I don't see, you know, that I don't have a peace practice or I don't see process. It is that the process is playing out right now.
That's right. The invisibility thing got triggered.
And the other thing I saw about it was if I share anyway, or if I facilitate anyway, or if I share about it in group, then the invisibility process didn't play out, really.
Exactly. And, you know, the critical thing, which is so perfect for what we're looking at this morning, that I want to underline is what you started with, which is that I feel like I was able to see this because I didn't go to the self-care.
Yeah, it was just...
You know, that's the thing that's so often... That's there to stop us from seeing what there is to see.
Yeah, because I can actually remember that whole facility. I mean, I can remember the person... all the facial expressions and when I could tell that person was... Yeah. You know, I mean, I could remember all that.
Which tells you were really, really there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is exactly... I mean, that's the place Sherry talks about. The most helpful place in practice is when there's something going on, but awareness sticks around for it.
Yeah, and you know, the reason I was thinking about what happened before that, because I knew, kind of knew when we got in the group that I was going to have a difficult experience of some type. Mm-hmm. And I thought, it was like the person that wanted to practice with it was here. Yeah. Because I was like, okay, so I'll see what I see about this.
Right.
Let's forget it's a facilitation retreat and it's a practice retreat.
Yes.
And so I kind of had that thought before I went into it, and then I was able to see a lot about it. And then I felt like, you know, my hermitage this morning, I had that a real like TINW experience of that somebody being seen in a way with compassion that she's never been seen before, because she's so under the radar, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just like a huge release.
Yeah, yeah. And again, as facilitators, you know, that's what we're going for, is to, we're simply offering what we're practicing.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that just so frustrates me so much about this process, is that I've had to work with such hard things that it's made me a really good facilitator. You know, it's made me really love facilitation and have a lot of sensitivity, you know, to what's going on with the other people. Mm-hmm. And then to have this process that's kind of ripping that opportunity away from me, at least in this venue right now.
Yeah, although it isn't. Right?
Well, it's sort of.
Yeah. I mean, that's just such a fascinating conclusion. I mean, we won't do it, but to go around the room and, is that what you heard about? Are you just sad that Marie's not? Because what you laid out is, I mean, and that's what we're going to be talking about all morning, is, you know, we're all going to be talking about, what is my version of that? What's my version of, I get up on the cushion and just, you know, everything gets thrown at me? And how do we work with that? And what you're saying is you had a huge success with that, you know? So here's the biggest thing that conditioning wants to throw at me, and it's a really challenging process. I mean, so I'm the facilitator, and the process is being invisible. That's tricky.
Really is, because I saw the magnitude of that.
Yeah.
You know, because on a lot of, you know, it just reinforces itself all these different ways.
Yeah.
And then if I don't talk about it in group ever, then it's kind of...
Right.
Get its own life.
So it wants to do this invisibility process, and you set an intention of, all right, here it is. I'm going to stay here, basically. I'm going to stay here as this goes on, because this is what I want to do. So I stay here, I see all this stuff. Oh my gosh, it all comes up. It feels difficult to facilitate because this is going on. I see through it. You know, I have these big moments back in my hermitage, breakthroughs, compassion for the person. I come to group. I'm willing to put my hands up first thing. And then here you are talking about it now, and what's the conclusion conditioning wants to make? It's holding me back. I'm not able to really...
Yeah, but see, I should be sitting there. That's what I get told.
You should be sitting here.
I've been with practice so long, I should be facilitating in the front of the monastery room instead of dealing with a invisibility process.
That's an interesting.
But you know, the other thing I wanted to say.
Are we going to talk about yesterday? I mean, that's just. I mean, I think that's worth pausing. It's. Yeah.
I don't don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I've gotten so beaten up for it for so long, but I think this morning I just saw it with so much compassion that the fact that I'm even here, that I even got this far, you know, that this is really quite a miracle.
It's huge.
And, and so sometimes, you know, I feel like so much like I'm comparing myself to other people that don't have to deal with that particular piece of karma. I mean, we have whatever they have.
It's like the Howard workbook last night. I mean, comparing ourselves to someone else, what? What would that do? She has what she has, he has what he has, I have what I have, you have what you have. There's no comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, it's funny, I've been trying so hard, because ever since I went to the first TINW, I've just been in love with this practice and this work, and, you know, there's this kind of little thing of, ooh, if I could facilitate something like TINW, it would just be the greatest thing, and that's like, you know, it'll be three lifetimes. At the rate I'm going. Facilitation.
Well, I can't let it stand. So you can look and see what, you know, you might ask for the recording later on and listen to the exchange we've had, everything that you've reported, and that pull to pull it back into, reel it back into, well, you know, that was a great breakthrough, but...
Well, I mean, what I was seeing is, you know, it's like because we're having the facilitator training, it's kind of accelerated dealing with it, you know.
Yes.
That was where I was going with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say, though, is what I realized this morning after I'd kind of done all that is that was a TINW facilitation experience.
Yes.
I did it with myself.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and that was kind of cool.
Yeah. So three lifetimes until I've still maybe not. How about today?
Thank you.
So some of the things we thought we'd look at this morning, the topics that came under this heading are surviving the static, self-hatred and facilitation, dealing with the conditioning that happens, the previews, the someone threw in the during, which seems really good, that's the static, and then the post. Who is facilitating? And what keeps us separate from the group? So I'll read those one more time, and then I'm going to give us a few minutes just to consider it and take notes if you want to on what you see about those for yourself. So surviving the static, self-hatred and facilitation, dealing with conditioning before, during, and after facilitation. And also, as part of that, using the recordings. How to use the recordings of, you know, your own facilitation. Who is facilitating? And what keeps us separate from the group? You'll take a moment to consider those things for yourself. Sure. Surviving the static, self-hatred and facilitation, dealing with conditioning before, during, and after facilitating, including using the recordings of the facilitation. Who is facilitating? And what keeps us separate from the group? a minute or so to finish up. So, what are you seeing about that? Rebecca.
Well, my version of what we talked about earlier, it was so good to have that to start out with.
We didn't even pay her to do that.
Just let me know if you need to come.
Sure. Try to give you a little more notice.
Well, there's a kind of this invisible sort of takeover that happens with me is about somebody who, well, let's just say conditioning feels like, okay, I know how to do this. I'm in charge.
Yep.
And follow me.
Yep.
And my heart's racing just saying that. Mm. Does not like to be revealed.
Especially that kind of orientation.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be in charge. That's the whole deal.
All morning I was shocked when I realized I've just stumbled onto my inner George W. Bush.
That's one of those. I knew that a projection had to be in here somewhere, right?
I kind of do want to get up on this.
That is a startling revelation.
I know. I was like, oh my God. And I've sort of, I kind of made an agreement with myself that I can call that nickname if I do it with love. But anytime that that persona gets challenged, it's that transform your life quote. It just restates the story.
Yeah.
I'm in charge. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. This is rational. This is it. You know, and it just says that over and over and over and over. So that all of the reality just begins to sort of fade away. And really this is the only until that has been ever in my life, I come up against something with the monastery.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, the only other time was when my marriage kind of just... But that even, I think, was somehow definitely connected to the practice.
True.
And I just want to say the collateral damage... I want to just acknowledge that. As hard as that is, because it's mostly, or first, not necessarily mostly, but first it's me.
Yeah.
You know, the little parts of me that are just.
Yeah. That
metaphor that Sherry used on the radio program with George yesterday about this part is clinging to the side of the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me it's really important to see that the collateral damage is here too, because it assists with seeing that this process is not me.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because we can get so convinced that, oh God, I'm the person who's doing it and this is a bad way to be, and but this is a process that's happening, and even lots of parts of me are on the, you know, however you want to say that,
ropes.
Negative side of that.
Yeah.
You know, the rough, yeah.
And in fact, the only way I could see it was to to see that it wasn't, that it's not me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only prayer I've never had of seeing it.
Yeah,
because,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. And I think I saw when Marie was talking about an early memory, what came up for me was when I think this might have been born. Was in third grade, me and I and a couple of friends got in trouble. It was the first time I'd ever been in trouble at school. And it felt so dangerous, like to be in trouble, that it felt life or death if I lost my teacher's or my mother's approval. And I remember gathering these little two 8-year-olds with me and saying, okay. Let me do the talking. And I made up this lie that sounded so incredibly believable to an 8-year-old. and it so got me out. You know, when I looked back years later, I kind of remember my teacher going, okay. You know, she just clearly, you know. But it was like, oh my God, I realized how powerful that felt.
We survived that because I took charge here.
And because I can spin.
Yeah.
You know? But what's coming up right now is that kept me in delusion a long time for a lot of different things, particularly my marriage. And I just see my son as the collateral damage for a lot of that, you know. I mean, as the receiver of the pain and, you know, all of that. And it's a very, very dangerous person to get on a cushion.
In the same way that kind of any person on the cushion would be dangerous.
I'm glad you said that, because it was making me just feeling like that's the worst person that can be on the cushion. And I don't really... Would you say more?
Well, it's just... You know, and to me, that's what we're... That's what we're looking at this morning, is becoming aware of the place of being on the cushion and facilitating, and for each of us, what gets in the way of just being on the cushion and facilitating. You know, whether it's someone who really wants to get on the cushion, or someone who's terrified of the cushion, or, you know, I mean, I'm sure we'll go around and hear from lots of people about their versions of that, and how that gets in the way. And there's, you know, there's a bunch of interesting things about it. One, that, you know, ideally, no one's on the cushion, right? There isn't an eye on the cushion facilitating. And, you know, this was brought up a little bit last night. You know, there's a way in which, as we practice facilitating, you know, we're gonna do all kinds of things. And there are going to be eyes that show up on the cushion. And one of the things that's such a huge gift of facilitating, and why I project people are drawn to do it, it's the thing that deepens practice, is that there is that immediate feedback. Because it just doesn't work. You know, it just doesn't work. And I mean, an identity like you're talking about, who has that kind of, you know, all right, I'm going to, you know, I've got it, I'm taking it from here, you know, it's a miracle in a way that you bring yourself to a practice that's going to always put a mirror up against that.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because someone who wants to, who is really going to go, that could be a life orientation, is for many, many, many people. You know, that kind of, it's up to me, I can do it, to put yourself in a position where, you know, that's going to be pointed out is, you know, it's big. It's so supportive to the system, because an identity like that could easily, you know, steal an entire life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what's coming up is what was said last night, that it's the cushion, it's the process.
Yeah.
And so of course the whole gamut of human conditioning is gonna pass through that.
Yeah.
It's just kind of just like it's passing through us in a sense, you know, why should that? But that the integrity of the process is what's our salvation in a way.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm just, as you're talking, Rebecca, I'm just thinking, and it would be fascinating to hear from other people about this, especially folks who have had a lot of time on the cushion, that it's my experience that that I showing up on the cushion doesn't need to happen very many times. Do you know? And that, I mean, it's one of the things I think I hear people talk about all the time, and we've talked about on this retreat, why there's such gratitude for being able to be in the position of sitting on the cushion. Because it's a place where there isn't very much room for all the other stuff that goes on. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a safety zone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm called to it. It's like people talk about the reflective listening call, you know? It's time for that stupid call, and then pick up the phone, and I have no choice but to be present. You know, it calls me to that, to being here. So actually, it would be interesting to see that I, who wants to take charge, does she show up on the cushion, or does she show up in other ways around, like, you know, trying to make decisions about things around facilitation, or because I would project there isn't a whole lot of room for her on the cushion, but that so she maybe she tries to insert herself in other places, mm-hmm. you know, kind of around the edges.
Yeah, you know, I think there is. That feels. You know, there are times when I say things. Just, I mean, this is like that. Ooh, that plate, that pinch that feels so good when you know, because you see it is when I put things out, like on the board calls, and it just like falls flat. Just like silent.
Maybe not.
Oh, there's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those other kind of opportunities, but yeah, I guess. Well, I really don't have a whole lot of experience on the cushion to say, but my experience is that if I go to my experience, I feel like I'm at my best mm-hmm. when I'm there.
Yeah.
So kind of the conniving and the, you know, all that kind of happens around it.
Yeah, kind of before, after, planning, making decisions around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making the stories up about
making
it.
Making the stories up about it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for pointing to that. That's because I could have seen a big whole story that would have kept me forever off the cushion.
Right, exactly. Oh, this is too dangerous.
I'm going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave.
This is a great topic. I was thinking you've got to talk. This might be like the most important thing to look at for this group of people. Mm-hmm. And I thought everything that was said was just so right on. And what I was looking at for myself is kind of the training that I've received around facilitation and what that's been about. Right. And it really, you know, it's interesting that last distinction you made about being on the cushion, being off the cushion. Mm-hmm. I would say that I have not received a whole lot of training about being on the cushion.
Right.
In particular, because that kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah.
In a certain kind of way.
Yeah.
But off the cushion, oh, God.
That's a really interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know that also from relating to the sitting group heads over the years. I mean, because that's, you know, I don't know how to say it exactly. It doesn't imply something I don't mean, but here's what comes up, that we can't trust ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On some level, we can say we can absolutely trust ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we're not, I think, as we go along in practice, it takes a really, really, really long time to get to understanding what it is that we can actually trust.
Right.
And what seems really trustworthy.
That's right. Yeah.
And really, we really can't trust.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's funny because I've been here so long, it's hard to know what other people's experiences are of being here and you know, for short periods of time in the monastery, but I mean, that's what training is.
Yeah.
Is, it's kind of like what you were just talking about. But
and that's what I was thinking too, of keep coming back to the monastery or practice or whatever it is and having that mirror put in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was listening. We have to have that mirror.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason what's happening right now has not happened until now.
Yeah.
Is because we haven't really, there has been no way to do that.
Yeah.
And I think we don't have that now in our program, really. And I think that's a piece of what's going to come out of this week, I think, is some way to provide a, it's not accountability, because that's not the right word, because a reason I think it is happening right now is because there are people in the practice who are at that level.
Yes.
Who, in a sense, can be trusted.
Yes.
And yet, we all know, even for those of us who, have been here for years and years and years and years and years, I don't think any of us would choose to be on our own with anything.
Exactly.
Because we know we can't be trusted.
Exactly. that first level of trust is to know that I can't be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, on a certain level, you become trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Do you know? So I was thinking about the people in this room. I mean, what we hear from people over and over is, I know there's a lot to do, and is there any way you could listen to my tape of facilitation? Mm-hmm. People want that.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be knowing that, boy, this is really deep stuff that we're talking about, and it takes a lot of training to really get at the subtleties of what we're looking at. Could I get assistance here with that?
Yeah.
And that makes that person trustworthy, because they realize they're not just going to, go off and create a whole thing and,
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that really is kind of what's making this thing possible.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there is something, I mean, I can only project because I don't really know, but it's definitely my experience of myself. There is something in me that is very, very, very powerful.
Yeah.
And very, very, very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
That is ultimately not willing to follow guidance, and wants to be in charge. Mm-hmm. I really related to I can't remember how it was said, but
right.
I want to be in charge.
Right.
This is my conditioning speaking.
Let me do the talking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So part of what comes up for me is, this is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with reflective listening based call. We talk about that a lot in the support calls. It's not about reflecting. It's not about being reflective. It's not about what you see as you're on the content level, but what you're, it's about seeing the difference between being present and not present.
Mm-hmm.
That really is what the whole shmeal is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like it's the same for this, but on just a much deeper level. to see where we're hanging on to the need to be in control of, our lives, and then as that, and and then making everything in our lives an extension of that, including practice and what can represent practice.
So if I'm following, when you talk about that part of you that's really, really powerful and kind of would like to be in charge, that's where you're talking about realizing that I can't be trusted, in the sense that I want to stay with the team, because if I get too far out there, that part eventually will want to take the driver's seat.
Yeah, I've even heard Sherry say that, although I've never heard her say anything like, that can't be trusted, but why isn't she just off doing something on her own?
Yep.
Because you would have to ask her, but I think what she would say is she needs the support of being in relationship to Sangha in the same way that we all do.
Yeah, I remember her talking about, completing her training and looking around and realizing, all right, I have to surround myself with practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she started to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Because what better way to surround oneself with practice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just think it's such a good thing for us to be paying attention to. And I like the point that was made, or at least it was implied, that you know, there's no standard for this at all. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a great gift in what's being offered here in giving people the opportunity to explore, because if you don't have a form for that, I mean, you will never find it out.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a million years and you will never find out the difference. You have to be able to put yourself on the line, right, and then get that feedback and see what's the difference between those things.
Yeah.
But it just seems really, really important for all of us to keep that in mind, that that's what we're doing and that's what our attention needs to be on,
mm-hmm,
rather than, you know, am I a good facilitator, not a good facilitator, mm-hmm, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I coming from?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on with me right,
yeah,
now? You know, what, you,
yeah,
know? And
yes,
where do I need help if I need help? You know, where, yeah, do I need some kind of assistance? Because for people at the monastery, it's kind of built in the system that you, mm-hmm, get the feedback. Because everybody's watching you. out there, not so much. And so it's going to require a lot more. It's going to require a lot of willingness on parts of people to say, hey, here's what's going on for me. As people have been doing on the call, I think, very courageously.
Right.
Here's what's going on for me. What do you think?
Yeah. So the attention essentially needs to be on practice.
Mm-hmm.
The attention needs to be on, you know, as you said, where is this coming from? You know, what's going on? It's kind of the top of the morning. And I think what you said, this could be the fundamental piece of what we look at as we're training in facilitation. You know, what's going on for me internally as I facilitate? Because it would be easy for the focus to become on the, well, what, you know, facilitation skill am I using right now? And what, you know, mm-hmm, and ooh, maybe I'll do this kind of, and maybe I'll branch out and, you know,
yeah, or whatever your karmic deal is. So
whatever your karmic deal is.
Your karmic deal is like being in a relationship with people.
Yeah.
Could be, oh boy, you know, I'm connecting over here, I'm connecting over here.
Yeah.
I'll send some emails, let people know what's going on.
Which sounds funny, but if it's your deal, I cannot tell you, of course you know, over the years, how many people have gone down these tracks,
mm-hmm,
and get really far out there before they realize or we have any idea that they're doing that. And it's not because they're bad people or they're, it's just, it seems so right.
Mm-hmm.
It feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
It seems so logical, of course.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, it's assumptions. You know,
mm-hmm,
it's why we have the guideline, not to assume. Because we get way out there and don't realize, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And then wake up and realize, how did I get out here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was some excellent modeling so far this morning and just in how to get beyond that.
Yes.
You know, it's it really is, yeah. Like you said, focus on practice. You know, putting that first,
mm-hmm,
and knowing that sometimes that's going to look pretty great. Sometimes it's going to look kind of fishy. But that's totally all right. But it's just that if we have that as our focus, then we'll have a really good chance at moving beyond what it is that we bring to it. Which I just keep, what I keep getting is that's the point.
Yeah.
And that's the real opportunity we're being offered is. Is a vehicle for getting beyond ourselves and,
mm-hmm,
and how we are trapped in the lives that we are trapped in.
Yeah, a vehicle for getting beyond what we're stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what, mm-hmm, conditioning keeps us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Linda.
This is such a neat conversation because I'm seeing something about my own facilitation that I hadn't really seen before. And it's so much, we cannot separate facilitation from practice or practice from facilitation,
right,
if we do the word honors.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really think has made me into a more trustworthy facilitator is letting go of thinking I had to fix people.
Mm-hmm.
Or letting go of thinking, and so coming in with the two karma,
mm-hmm,
being the helper and being the therapist and being the person who.
There it is, being the person who.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as that has been let go of, and I can't say that it's been conscious, but
mm-hmm,
it's come in because of practice, to be able to see so clearly that each person truly is adequate,
mm-hmm,
to whatever is going on for them.
Yeah.
And each role play truly is the perfect role play,
yeah,
even if it doesn't fit the standards,
right,
of some. And that's what I'm seeing partly in the conversation this morning, is,
mm-hmm,
not having an agenda about how things should go.
Yes.
So I don't need to leave the person who's been in tears smiling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really good. We might end the session with that person still in tears. Yeah. And that's fine.
Yeah.
It's truly fine.
Yeah, it really, it's a really, really good point. You know, I don't know, folks, you know, I watched Sherry facilitate and just how masterful she is and how the wide range of interactions that she has with people.
Yeah.
From, you know, long and so, you know, this and that angle of it and this angle to very, very short.
Yeah.
And even something that's, you know, seems huge in there, but there's so much in that and they haven't seen this and they haven't seen that. And it just, there's nothing that needs to be done, essentially.
Exactly.
There's nowhere we need to take people or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And letting go of that just feels so huge because we are also trained, especially those of us who trained as people who take care of other people, that taking care of looks a certain way.
Yeah.
And to not do it that way, you're being mean, you're being whatever the list of negatives would
right.
be. But in fact, and again, and Sherry models it so beautifully, being can be incredibly kind.
Right.
And just exactly what's needed.
Yes.
So to really let go of any ideas about what's compassionate beyond allowing people to sort of find their own way and facilitate that.
Yeah.
But not to find my way.
Yeah. And I like your point, too, that it sounds like, from what you're describing, it's been a real work in progress. It's been, you know, many, many years of practicing, and that, you know, I project you're talking about subtleties. So that, you know, so 10 years ago when you facilitated, and you didn't necessarily see these nuances, that in the meantime, you weren't wrecking people's lives. Right? I mean, we're not funny. Yeah, but it's just...
It's a pretty rough stuff when I was first a therapist.
Okay, therapist, but...
Yeah.
Once you have the facilitation skills.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of the nice thing about having such clear guidelines of what we do on the cushion, and why I feel like it's so kind that people kind of move through stages of facilitating. You know, we start out with reflective listening, and then we hum up. Because all of that for each of us, so for you, it's the helping. You know, got to help someone, got to get them, you know, to a good place. That the structures of what we do on the cushion helps to weed that out while we see it for ourselves.
Yeah.
And now today, you're weeding that out for yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think the real substance of seeing it came from practice, not necessarily from sitting on the cushion.
Yeah, yeah.
Really getting it that there is nothing wrong. Once you get really get it, then everything else kind of falls into place, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. Good. Thank you. Penny, you want to come up this side?
What I'm thinking about or reflecting right now in this conversation is just what a huge relief and gift it is to be invited into not being in control. I mean, really, really abandoning that illusion of control.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm coming from is, you know, a background as a minister, you know, where, first of all, you're up higher.
Right.
And you are supposed to create a worship experience for other people.
No pressure.
It's a wonderful creative opportunity for you.
Right.
and doing that for a while and getting it after a while that I had no idea what was happening. No idea at all what was happening for people. None.
Right.
Zero. So, and but I was supposed to.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so what a relief it is to be part of a practice where we know we don't know.
Right.
And so we're totally free of that, of needing to do that or be that. It just feels huge. And I remember coming into, you know, the first time I came into a meditation hall and everybody was on the same level.
Yeah.
That was so cool. And then the person was facilitating one day was not facilitating the next, and they kind of rotated, and I thought, whoa, this is so different. Such a different model.
Mm. Who's in charge here?
Exactly. And so I just want to celebrate the freedom of we start knowing that we don't know.
Yeah.
And just, we put ourselves there because we're invited to.
Yeah.
Because You know, if we put ourselves there, then we provide an opportunity for ourselves and everybody else, and then we rotate around, like that round robin last night.
Yeah, that's me.
I just, that as a model is so powerful, and it's ironically, it's so much more powerful than that model of control.
Yeah.
That was such a sham.
Well, and what's interesting in what you're saying is that it really provides the minister with an experience, as you're saying. You know, I'm just seeing that, you know, so the person who's up there, you know, kind of doing their thing, standing up, I would project gets the experience, you know, has that, you know, is in the inspiration. But it's so interesting that it at least has the potential to leave out everyone down here, and yet kind of being in a room like this is a shared experience.
I love my own preaching.
And it's easy.
I was so inspired.
It's easy to project that many ministers, having had a father as a minister, I can
attest to that. And it's easy to maintain that illusion of control until people come to you and say things like, "Oh, you know, the day that you said this, and you realize you've never said it ever." Or you give a sermon you think is awful, and like people come up and say, "This changed my life." You know, and you give one you think is brilliant, and everybody just walks by and says, "Thank you, thank you."
Right.
You just get it that you don't know it. You don't know it. So, you know, to just be where we can know that, the freedom of that, is just huge.
Yeah. And again, you know, that all we're doing, the person sitting on the cushion, is just, you know, being the person for the day who's going to hold the space for us to see what we're going to see.
That's
just so Buddhist, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I just love that notion that we're just taking our turn.
Just taking our turn, exactly.
And I'll do it. And then our turn the next time is something entirely different. And then our turn is something different. And we just step into it because it's there to step into. Not because we have any idea what we're doing or because we're in control of anything.
Yeah, and it's very simple yet profound because, you know, I mean, the whole Sangha is not in this room, you know? I mean, there's a way in which anyone can take a turn on the cushion, and yet we need to see a certain amount about our own practice in order to be able to hold that space.
Yeah.
So sitting here on the cushion, I'm not doing anything. I don't need to have any, you know, great, huge skills but to be at a certain place in practice that I can be in, you know, stand in my own practice, which is what allows me to hold the space.
Right.
It's a sacred space.
Yeah. Sequoia. Gosh, I don't really know what I'm going to say, but I do know it's kind of a practice, I think, right now, just having that karma about, I can really relate to that, trying to stay invisible and under the radar and, you know, so just making it to shift.
Yeah.
To share as much as I can.
Putting yourself a point on the map.
Right. And, one thing, boy, I think I must be right on track with the retreat because I'm just, so much karma is coming up and just so much, I realized that, you know, I said what I wanted from the retreat was love. And I felt like, you know, gee, I just really experienced that, like on the second day of the retreat. And the one thing I said that I was most afraid of is that I wouldn't be able to attend the retreat. That for some reason, you know, I don't know, I'd get sick or, you know, I'd have to, something would keep me from being in this room, and it was really, really important to me. But what I didn't see was something could keep me from being in this room, and it didn't mean that I had to go down the road somewhere, you know. And so that's what just came up for me last night, you know, was just not being here at all and feeling really, talking about being separate from the group and facilitating, you know, just feeling totally separate. And then where that always goes for me is that, I gotta leave. You know, I just, obviously, you know, I get a lot of self-hate around, I hear this a lot, you're not gonna make it, you know. I hear these words a lot too, you're just an old, deluded lady, a woman, you know. And truly, the only thing that got me through the night last night and allowed me to sleep was I remember there was a peace quote that I read recently where Sherry said, the only thing that really matters is how you are with yourself. Mm-hmm. And every time I thought of that, you know, my whole body would just relax and I could be with that person and kindness and, you know, just hold her. Mm-hmm. And that whole thing that was brought up about, you know, being trustworthy and non-trustworthy, and there's just so much around, you know, being trustworthy and and to see the areas of none where I'm not trustworthy, mm-hmm. is just like, just, you know, difficult.
It's difficult. It's difficult to see those areas?
Yeah, it feels like, yeah.
Like painful?
Painful. Mm-hmm. Just really painful. Mm-hmm. And,
and is there a way that the person for whom that's painful can be attended to?
Yeah, well, yeah, I feel like that's where I've been looking and, you know, the last few hours and, you know, how to attend to that person in a way that's, because I can see what's going on in the way of self-hate and conditioning, just really fighting to to get me.
Yeah, get the upper hand.
Get the upper hand, mm-hmm. you know, and the whole thing about being with the Sangha of just incredible people, you know, and someone just has such a desire to be, you know, a part of the Sangha and a contribution, and then there's that, you know, just that fear that that she won't be, you know. And anyway, I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, well, it just, it's so classic what you described, isn't it? So you, what comes up for you when you look at what I want from the retreat is love. And then you begin to receive that.
Yeah.
And then, so then the whole just red alert.
Yeah.
You know, the whole system just goes into overdrive to try to pull you back from that experience.
Right.
And, you know, one of the techniques that you're describing that it uses is, you know, I can't remember how you phrased it, but something like, I'm so afraid that that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, well, it's happening now, but what about later when it might not happen?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, so that steals from me what's happening now.
Which is kind of interesting when you reflect that back. I was just thinking about my facilitation experience, which, you know, it's pretty limited, that I was thinking that, you know, the first time I ever sat on the cushion to facilitate, and I had this really amazing experience of just feeling a lot of love. And boy, you know, since that time, it's become more about a person sitting on the cushion, you know. Mm-hmm. I can just see how it tries, mm-hmm. how that is trying to take that from me.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
When you had that experience, it was beginner's luck. and from now on, you know, it's just going to be a downhill slide.
Yeah.
And
what's so amazing about it is what's going to be required is for that facilitation practice we've been talking about in the last couple of days, of you facilitating that person who's having that difficult experience.
Yeah.
You know, you said, for example, you know, all these areas where you see you cannot be trusted and how painful that is.
Yeah.
And who's going to be there to facilitate her?
Right.
You know, who's going to be there to facilitate the person who's being told, well, that was just beginner's luck and
Yeah. That's my practice right now.
Yeah.
And I guess that's about as good a facilitation training as one can go to.
Exactly. I mean, it's the highest level stuff there is. Right. You know, I've got my own little practice thing right here.
Yeah.
And it's why the something like the two chairs is so great. Because there really is a person here who has a real live issue that we can actually practice on.
Right.
You know? So tell me more about that. Well, it just feels like... So it feels like... Truly.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks. And could pass the Kleenex up from the back of the room.
Yeah, it's coming. Today. Thank you. I miss Ramita, and then we'll keep coming up this way.
So much is coming up. One of the things that keeps me separate from the group is trying to remember all the things I want to say, so I'm going to try and practice putting that aside right now. Another piece that my version of who's facilitating is the one who doesn't need help. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that throughout practice, you know, thinking I know how to do this, mm-hmm. I can do this. And even when I share in group or guidance, I rarely ask a question. Is that, that you know? I know it all. I know. I'll report my successes, but you know, that's about as far. So that getting more of a sense of that personality.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's so helpful to see those, isn't it? To not have them just running the show, but to actually get a step back, like people have been describing, and actually see that.
Mm-hmm. And then, over the course of the days, I've been just hit with all sorts of the Zen paradoxes. Mm-hmm. And the one that's come up this morning is the importance of sitting on the cushion, being present in the role of facilitator, and taking that seriously, mm-hmm. as opposed, or on the other end, is the adequacy that would, belief in one's adequacy, mine and everyone else in the group, so that I really can't do any harm. Mm-hmm. That there's that, it may feel like harm, mm-hmm. but it can't. It can't happen that way. Mm-hmm. And yet I still have to take responsibility for showing up and asking for help and being reflective. And so.
And what do you see as you look at that paradox?
Being willing to ask for help and be reflective and be part of the team will keep me from harming myself, harming parts of myself, and that will carry over in the ripple effect that there is no harm happening. As long as, the other piece was setting, someone mentioned intention.
Yeah.
If I can set an intention before the group, then that sort of clears the space.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I love that practice. It clears the space and it reminds me of kind of who I am, if you will, in the sense of what I really want. And so what I want is to hold the space in the most skillful way that I can possibly manage. And so, you know, later on, if self-hate wants to say, I can't believe you, I know, I did not set out to do something terribly unskillful. I even out loud said the intention of what, you know, the group would be about. Yeah.
Well, thank you. That hearing your intention, because I would imagine, I project that everyone who's had a lot of time on that cushion has almost a ritual of setting an intention and a very tangible way of creating a space that really, I project, would be very helpful in forestalling a lot of the self-hate on the cushion, off the cushion.
It strikes me that I hope we'll have time this morning to look at some actual kind of, you know, tips, if you will, about some of the pre and post kinds of things, because I think that would be really useful. In the same way, the other day we were talking about the self-facilitation. I so enjoyed hearing everyone's different, you know, ways of doing that. The other thing that I just wanted to kind of underline in what you were saying is that place of you know, we can do no harm, I'm adequate, you know, we're all adequate to our experience, and yet there's also a place of, you know, asking for guidance and receiving, you know, all of that, because that's what works, you know. So that place of, you know, I can, you know, it'll all be fine no matter what happens is, of course, completely true, and there's a way, you know, and I want all the information that I can get about, you know, what's going to head me away from suffering. I want all that information. You know, I want all that information.
Just recognizing how important this practice is. Now, I'm talking about the lineage and the legacy, and it can feel like an overwhelming responsibility to be a representative. And on the other hand, it's very simple. It's staying present. It's doing everything I can to be present. And the more intensely present I am, the more I disappear into it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I don't know about for other people, but listening to Sherry on the radio show, was it last night, about the Bodhisattva story, and I thought, wow, that's quite a story to tell the day after we had that discussion we had around the lineage and the and that, you know, there she is sitting on top of that wall, waiting for all of us. And what a huge service that is. And that, you know, we're carrying that through. You know, we're the tour guides funneling people to the wall. That chair is up on the wall. That's great. Lori?
Wow, there's a couple things. This is so, it's really, really affecting me profoundly to be hearing, you know, what's going on for everyone, and one of them is just my own karma. It's sort of like what Melinda was saying about being a two and being a therapist and wanting to, you know, people to whatever. I don't even know what I want from people, you know, except when they tell me at the end of the session, this hasn't been helpful. sometimes that bothers me, and then I think, well, what the heck? You know, they come back, and then maybe they have a different kind of a session next time, and, you know, I just...
Well, and plus, who's saying this hasn't been helpful?
Exactly. So I'm beginning to, you know, my practice is sort of filtering down. But I tell you, that this is my facilitation barrier is that I've been facilitating only, you know, up until recently, only when Chris has been away, when he's been here at the monastery or whatever, you know, that I facilitate, and, you know, I think adequately, and sometimes it's better and sometimes not so good or whatever, and then being given this invitation, it's like really saying, oh, so maybe this is something more than just being a substitute, and seriously, and now the challenge for me is that that I'm facilitating while Chris is in the room, and I've just got so much stuff about this.
Sure.
It's huge, because Chris is he's a wonderful facilitator, and he's been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been leading us on for, I don't even know, 15 years at least, mm-hmm. that I've been going there, and I just go really blank and feel stupid, mm-hmm. when I'm sitting up in the front, and then I'll facilitate Chris, and I'll just think, oh God, you know, what am I saying? Is that all true? This isn't helpful. And the last time it was just me, Chris, and one other person, and who was really in this sort of sticky thing and his relationship, and oh man, I just at the end of it, I thought, why wasn't Chris doing this? At one point, I almost said, Chris, why did you do this? You know, it was really, really hard. And so to get out of the comparison of... So far I haven't been able to get past that. And because that was only twice, I think, or maybe three times that I've facilitated while Chris was in the room. It's just like this, all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, what am I doing here?
So it's been two or three times that you facilitated while Chris was in
the room. While Chris is in the room, yeah.
And so that seems like a pretty high expectation that you would... You know, you just said, I haven't been able to get past this.
Right. Okay. Oh, and it's only been 2 feet.
I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
There might be a lot more to see.
afterwards, I always wanted to say, well, Chris, how did I do? And of course, you know, I can't do that.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And so then I say to myself, okay, Lori, how'd you do? And I'm, oh. Yeah, it wasn't so bad. It's okay.
And that's a really interesting point that you bring up, because there's a way in which, so there's the post, you know, mm-hmm. so the post reviews, and so Kate wants to say all kinds of things about it, and there's a real self-facilitation opportunity in that.
Right.
And so, again, hopefully later we'll talk about some of those. And it would be an interesting thing to look at in the program is, are there some ways that we can get some feedback?
Right.
Because that would be really helpful, you know, just to hear different things about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be really helpful. I I just can also feel my reticence, you know, like the whole thing about yeah. taping and getting feedback, and in different circumstances in my life, and I've gotten feedback, and it's just been so painful, and hasn't been helpful, and and then really like coming up, and it's something else that I do. How can we develop compassionate awareness as a framework for giving feedback? So anyways, it's just that's all pretty boggling.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were just looking at with Sequoia, is that it's critical that we create that internal relationship mm-hmm. where there's someone mentoring, in this case for you, the person for whom the feedback can be painful. Mm-hmm. Because it's like we were looking at with Dave a little while ago, you know, what we're learning to do is learning how to learn. Because for so many of us, the process of learning was traumatizing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, it was no one really gives me the information, and I just do something, and it's probably wrong, and then I get the information that wasn't right, and oh, God. And now, you know, I try to get smaller and try harder to do, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're kind of relearning the process of learning, and what's required in that is that the internal mentor relationship is really, really strong.
Really strong.
So that then when someone listens to my tape and says, hey, Lori, you know, I noticed this and this and this, I can just hear that as information.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Instead of, oh, God, I'm a bad facilitator. And, you know, I was thinking how we've been talking all week about how, you know, folks are in these really high-level situations where they're off there completely on their own, facilitating brand new people to practice. And yet there's also the other side of it where they're, you know, you're sitting there with Chris, this veteran, or, you know, monks who haven't been here forever and ever sit up here in the cushion in front of all these other monks and facilitate. Yeah. And that's the whole other side of, you know, really, really high level facilitation. You know, it's like, oh, all eyes on me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Catherine.
I've been looking at my story of why I can't be a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
And I came here believing that I can't remember well enough. And my experience in facilitating here is that I remembered.
Mm.
Now, I didn't remember perfectly, probably. I'm guessing I didn't. But I survived it, and I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been looking at this story, and there's something about, I probably can't see all of it, but that Rebecca mentioned third grade. I project third grade onto groups. And at that time, I had to find a way to survive, realizing people here don't seem to like me.
Mm.
I'm not the smartest, I'm not the cutest. In fact, I'm a target sometimes of being made fun of. So how am I going to survive?
Mm.
And at some point I decided, I can't do things, I'm not enough.
Mm.
And that became my survival.
Mm-hmm.
And I am used to looking at that story, and when I'm aware somebody's caught in it, of a place of that person doesn't have a lot of self-esteem or, you know, some scorn.
Right.
And what I'm starting to see here is that there's a whole lot of anger and a lot of arrogance. Mm-hmm. There's this, screw you, I'm not going to be a part of this group.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's,
sure.
from that, I'm not talking about the group here, mm-hmm. but back then.
Mm-hmm.
And So stepping up to the plate and facilitating, being willing to do that and drop that story is feeling really challenging. And what's happened here is I've just simply done it. I mean, it's simply,
wow.
I'm facilitating here.
Yep.
The story has to be dropped.
The story, yep.
In order to do that.
Yep.
So. Is practice in doing that, and I think I was thinking it's just going to take years for me to drop that story.
Yeah.
It's just going to be so hard to drop that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's so good.
And then the exercise last night with what do you really know about yourself? And I had my age,
right,
what I do
exactly.
for a living, and yeah. where I live, you know,
right.
that kind of thing.
Right.
And I'm at the monastery.
Yeah.
And it was like,
not much.
Really, I don't
yeah.
know anything.
Yeah.
I know this story.
Yes.
And
yeah.
it was really freeing. It was good to see that. It was
yeah.
freeing to see
oh,
that.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So, stepping up to the plate, our, you know, I'm calling it that, but being a facilitator,
mm-hmm.
being part of this group, and claiming I'm a facilitator
mm-hmm.
in training.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm Catherine, and I'm a facilitator.
yeah, you're right. Owning that
yeah.
is like, part of me just feels fantastic, just
yeah.
feels wonderful.
Yeah.
And this part of this going, you cannot
yep.
allow yourself to shine here because
yep.
you're going to be such a target,
yep.
more
mm-hmm.
of a target.
Yeah.
And well, of course, I'm a target for self-hate.
Right, all the time, no matter
yeah.
what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's I'm not.
Might as well make myself a target for compassion.
yeah. yeah. And, you know, when someone, earlier when someone was sharing about needing a mentor and mentoring that part, and
yes.
that's where I feel like I am now.
Yes.
That some,
yeah.
that this part of you just wants to do this and,
yeah.
And it's just willing to just do it because it's practice,
mm-hmm.
could use some help.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah. And so when I'm facilitating, there's no room for the story. So the possibility is that you could be facilitating all the time, her, and there'd be no room for the story. I mean, to me, that's what I project when, you know, we were writing on the whiteboard and said, you know, what would it be like to be the facilitator all the time? There it is. There's never any room for a story. There's just life.
I have to say I'm feeling nervous sharing,
mm-hmm.
Partly because this is being recorded for facilitators to mm-hmm. listen to, and I'm aware of that.
It's funny, isn't it? Somehow it's different, like, so everyone in the room is hearing it, and there are a few people outside
yeah,
the room
just
hearing
like
it, but
couple.
That just adds a little. It's kind of like that, the topic, I can't remember what section we put it in, but it's different, say, sitting on the cushion than public speaking,
mm-hmm.
or it's different sitting on the cushion when, you know, so, you know, advanced facilitator is in the room when there isn't, you know. What is that?
Yeah. And there's a recorder in here quite often.
Yeah, exactly. yeah,
I tend to just kind of block that out.
Oh, it's so, I mean, it's just like, what happens in the brain that makes that different and creates a different, you know, physical experience? It's so interesting. Yeah.
I set an intention to participate in this retreat, and I feel like I need to expose a little bit of self-hate that
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's related, but I set the intention to participate in this retreat sort of on the heels of last week being caught in a story that I didn't know how to practice, didn't understand this practice,
mm-hmm.
And I had some self-hate come in yesterday with the conversation about the energy vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that story a lot that was me for a long time in group.
That you were the energy vampire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that I then set the intention to not be the
entrepreneur.
And so often there was monitoring
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
And
wait, it's like the, do you remember the, everyone's done, there's nothing I can see, the origin formations, do you remember that model where, you know, step 1 through 6, and then and then step 5 is the decision to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And then step 6 is the judge is born.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I make this decision, boom, the judge has to start watching me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I still can slip into that, or at least I'm told.
Yeah.
And as recently as last week, where I feel like that is the case.
That you were the energy vampire.
Yeah.
Oh.
At least that's the story I'm told, and
mm-hmm.
it may, in fact, actually be the case.
And yet, there's no need to figure that out, right?
Not at this point, I
suppose. what would that do? Mm-hmm. You know, to have my attention on that, well, it might, I mean, it might actually be true that I'm more than I was. Well, but no, probably not. But I might have been. But, I mean, what? Where are we going with that conversation? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just had a lot of self-hate mm-hmm. when that conversation was going on, mm-hmm. talking about that, because I felt like it was being filtered through, yeah. that's the bad person. Right. The actual vampire is the bad person.
And I'm that person.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had enough distance from it where I was sitting with the person who was feeling that mm-hmm. way, right. and just was kind of going back to mm-hmm. here comes the self-hate, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. trying to be the facilitator.
Yeah. Of that person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And but I just want to say it out loud that mm-hmm. that was what was there, mm-hmm. And that is what is something that keeps me separate from the group and yeah. keeps me from participating.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like that ability to stay here as it's going on, just like other people have described this morning. So. This really deep thing that feels really real and true, and that goes on, and through practice there's the ability to stay with it, and I move into the position of being able to facilitate that person, and that's what allows me to actually stay in the game. That allows you to stay here, mm-hmm. you know, both physically and, you know, mm-hmm. with your attention, mm-hmm. and then has you put your hands up and keep participating. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I actually did put my hands up at the end of that actual group. And then I got slammed to that mm-hmm. for participating. Because it's either, the story is either, right now I was just told I'm totally off the topic, but just came through.
Should we check the topic again? I'm pretty sure we're right on it.
So I'm not talking about being a facilitator.
You're not?
at least on the cushion in the front room. So I suppose I'm talking about the internal process of self-facilitating.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, was the topic of the morning.
So the stories are either I'm the energy vampire or I have nothing good to say. Nothing articulate or insightful, or mm-hmm. that's a contribution, mm-hmm. And that it will just be stupid, basically. Mm-hmm. And so something occurred to me to say, and I chimed in, and that was the stupid thing to say.
Of course. I mean, of course. You know, it might, I just have this image of, you know, so something arises to say, and I'm going to put my hands up. And just a quick little check-in to go, okay, what we can know is that after this, the voices are going to say, that was a really stupid thing to say. That way, when they do that, we can know it had nothing to do with what I said, because mm-hmm. I already know what I was going to say. I didn't even know what I was going to say.
So, that whole separation from the group is just big.
It's big. Yeah.
It's big for being a part of participating group and yeah. being on the Christian facilitating.
Yep.
And being a part of this group, I relate to that feeling of really wanting to be a part of this group.
Yeah.
there's someone who really wants to be a part of this group.
Yeah. There's a lot of commitment and momentum here. And it really, it benefits all of us hugely that this many people are willing to show up mm-hmm. at this level of practice. You know, it's huge for all of us. Yeah.
It's feeling like, I'm not sure how to say it, but
Yeah. Could you even say facilitating?
And not doing that comparing.
Yeah.
Because that that happens quite frequently. Where, that can even be what people are saying is resonating, but I can't say it.
Right.
Those words don't fit together and come out of my mouth and articulate in some form. And then sort of to on the topic of being the facilitator and having that feeling of separation going on. I feel this, this whole process going on of not wanting to be a person of the Christian, wanting to just be present to the group, to the person facilitating, and having the conversation, and realizing there's someone here who's really nervous about this.
Nervous to be on the cushion.
Afraid they're not going to remember what the person shared,
and
not be able to reflect. And then having judgment about that. And so what I've done is offered reassurances. However, what I've found is that while it sort of helped me survive that experience, it also feels like it's dropping my attention to away from the person, away from the world, because I've got this, it's okay, you can do this going on.
So there are a bunch of things in that, and I think I can't remember if it's tonight or tomorrow that point about remembering everything and being able to reflect off of that. I think we're going to address that directly at some point. And boy, my intuition was right on. I was thinking we might need a break after when we end this, and I think that might have been true. And then there was another point. And then I was thinking maybe in a second we would take a kind of fluffing or a kind of break thing, and then maybe come back to some of the particulars of, you know, looking at that, the post and pre kinds of stuff, because that's really what you're talking about. And maybe people could share their tips on that.
Yeah, I'd like to hear tips.
Great. All right, so should we stand up and stretch and all that? Thank you. Thoughts, tips on before, during, and after facilitation. I'll try not to neglect this side of the room this time. Dave.
This is a fun, really fun topic for some reason. For me, what I do is keep the attention engaged. And especially if like there's like a big thing coming up, like a big retreat or something.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've noticed is that I can't remember actually how it was in the beginning, but it might have been a spoke at the beginning, but the facilitator always shows up in time. Yeah. And so you don't have to really worry. Mm-hmm. You know, usually, actually, somebody very different from the facilitator is there before the
getting experience. Ready.
Yeah. And I have the. Yeah. Well, I remember distinctly the first time I ever saw it, but it's become my experience since then. That was actually, it was, you know, a Saturday, DMW's getting ready to start, very threatening situation for my conditioning. Mm-hmm. This was years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm down by the hot shower. I think I might have been cleaning them, even. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. I just felt, you know, in the end, sort of a, not a panic, but a, just a nervous, kind of thing about it. And just it's like it just came from somewhere and mm-hmm. just settled in. Mm-hmm. Just, thank God the facilitator's here. Mm-hmm. And another time is I have all these little rituals. People probably do this. It's the same, it's the equivalent of, you know, you tap your shoes 3 times and spit before you go and, you know, swing. And, that's funny, I don't like to do this anymore, but it used to be that before the first night of the retreat, I would always go in the same bathroom back there to change my clothes, put on my facilitator clothes. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
where superstition meets Zen practice.
Well, there's something about it that helps.
Yeah.
It's still like a tendency.
Which bathroom is that?
I mean, I think what you're pointing at is that so the facilitator is going to facilitate, ideally. And there are all these other parts of you who are having all kinds of things go on around about that. Mm-hmm. And that there are ways to kind of care for those parts of myself. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not going to be facilitating, mm-hmm. it's actually really crucial that we turn our attention to them and care for them in ways, because then they don't need to facilitate.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the biggest way is just keeping the attention engaged. Not allowing, I would never sit on the porch for an hour. Before a big facilitation experience. Never do that.
Just ponder that. Yeah.
But to be doing stuff and not to be hurrying or not trying to get anything done.
Yep.
But just Sheri talks about it as actually I can't remember what word she used. The word I use is fiddle. You know, mm-hmm. fiddling. Mm-hmm. Just doing stuff. Just kind of putting just attending what needs to be attended to.
Yeah.
Just because it gives something to put the energy into.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives something to put the energy into that's in the present moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exercise, I think, is an excellent thing mm-hmm. for it because it helps mm-hmm. that energy move mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah. And what people have talked about of that kind of nervousness is something that, you know, facilitators, when we're facilitating the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, talk a lot about that. Just mm-hmm. And it can feel like, oh, God, I'm so nervous, and yet really it's just the energy building, getting ready for this big thing that I'm going
to... Yeah, Sheri said something to me one time that really, really helped with that because it's just... You know, it's just like the typical is Saturday night, everybody arrives. Sunday morning, you've got all night, and you haven't really got started.
Right, you're not really in the saddle yet.
Yeah, exactly. And there's all that space and mm-hmm. just this energy. And you know, and what she said to me at one point a while back is, it's just that you don't know yet how to hold that mm-hmm. amount of energy in your body. Yeah. And just to recognize that's the energy that's arising to meet the situation that you're going into.
Yeah.
And that as soon as you're there, it will have the thing there that it's kind of like a gear.
Exactly.
You know, if the gear is not engaged, it'll just spin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it gets engaged, then, that, and that's very much been my experience.
Yeah.
And it really helps because it takes away the anxiety of, oh, God, I'm not the right person.
Right.
You know, I can't sit on a cushion like this.
I'm completely nervous. Why am I so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And enduring is less of a problem, mm-hmm. usually. But a couple things I do, I hold something in my hand a lot of times, mm-hmm. like my finger, mm-hmm. And as a place to put my attention, mm-hmm. because it's here,
mm-hmm.
basically. And so I just be checking in with that. Am I, you know, just like that. And then often in between interactions, I'll check in with my heart.
Mm-hmm.
We will have been engaged, and there's this little thing where the attention comes back here before going out to the next person.
Yeah.
And comes back here to the heart.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to do anything there other than just, maybe I'll just take a deep breath, mm-hmm. and now, no.
Yeah.
And there's a little, because there's time to that, there's a little space right there.
Yeah, yeah, it's such an interesting thing, you know, when we were looking at with Amy, that place of reassuring,
mm-hmm.
you know, self-talk gets kicked up and, you know, this is not going well. I don't know what to do here. I don't understand what they're saying, you know. and doing that reassurance. And it's such, I'm not sure I can put words to it, but it's such an interesting place of being able to hold this being while still have the attention be in the facilitation.
Yeah. And you know, as far as experiences, conditioning, launching an attack while on the cushion, to me the barest thing in the whole world is reflective listening.
Yeah.
Just going back to that. I mean, and that's true, we'll talk about that more, but that really needs to be a foundation for everyone, facilitation. But particularly, you notice yourself getting distracted, that's the way to get back.
Yep.
And that's also the way to kind of prevent the unfortunate things that you're going to regret later.
Right.
You know? Because you're just reflecting back, it's very safe, it's very inverse. It's not like it's a lesser than kind of technique or anything, it really works.
Yeah.
And it helps just bring the pull attention back from whatever self-hatred is there.
Yeah, and again, I think later on we're going to be talking more about the particulars of doing that. And so there I am, you know, there's a lot challenging going on inside myself. That's not going to be a time maybe when I remember every single word that the person just said to me. So how am I supposed to reflect? But it's not necessary to remember every single word the person said to me. There's all kinds of ways to reflect without that.
And then for the post, is this, you know, this has changed my life, you know, in this month, that was many, many years ago. Just no reviews. That has to be the policy. It's no reviews policy.
Yep.
You know, just walk out and never think about it again.
Yeah, the never think about it again is a little challenging, right? Because conditioning tends to be on its own program.
Mm-hmm.
But that, again, setting the intention of, but I'm not going to engage with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give that my attention.
Well, and it can definitely be done, too. I mean, you could just walk out and that never happened.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's different from, it's not closing the door to the insights there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, you know, it's funny because there's this really bizarre thing that happens where we joke about it as facilitators. Somebody will come, you know, we'll have a group of 8 people here on TMW. And I mean, it's a very intimate thing. And you, by the time they walk out of here, you know everything there is to know about these people. And then 3 days later, you can't remember their name. and I think that's from our training. It's like, okay, done. Attention comes back here, and we're doing practice. I changed my role. Basically, the facilitator goes where the facilitator goes when he's not around, because he's the one who probably would remember. And then, but it's good because
The chainsaw, like someone was talking about before, it's time to on to the next thing.
Yeah, okay, where's the attention need to be now?
Yeah.
Not allowing attention just kind of, and that's just a basic life skill, you know? Not allowing attention just to wander around, because it'll always land on something unpleasant if it's not being directed consciously.
And I don't think you said this explicitly, but implied in what you're saying is no reviews, period. So also, the, boy, that was like, that's the best I've ever done. All that is just self-hate opening the door, getting you to join the conversation. Because if you watch, and actually I had to prove that to myself. I remember Sherry talking about, not particularly about facilitation, but Sherry talking about that every conversation ends in a train wreck. And I got really interested in that. Is that really true? And watching how, you know, something really fun, positive, interesting, you know, starts, and then if you follow it, sure enough, it's going to end in, you piece of...
And it really is clear facilitation, too, because that's not generally going on this mission.
Right.
And so you walk out, and then it immediately will start up, so it's really clear that it's it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I didn't have to have too many experiences of, hey, that was great, and then go around a corner and just get clobbered to know that I can't go to either place.
And I'm just realizing as you're saying that really the habit becomes, the no reviews becomes the habit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really can't train ourselves that way. I mean, I don't know if you know other senior facilitators can speak to that, but that is, I mean, that's it. There's no talking back about, I mean, I can remember being early on, just going through each, hashing out the details and with that and that, and just letting it go. Just completely, as you say, it didn't even happen.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is it completes the circle, because then that provides a safety for the next time. Because I've had the experience that that's possible, and I didn't get beat up. I can remember one time, it was, I don't know, a couple, three TNWs into it or something, having guidance point with Sherry and saying, you know, I don't think I had any self-hate. And it was such a huge, it's like, wow, I did not even know that was possible in this lifetime. And Because before that, I was just like getting creamed. And after that, too, to be honest. You know,
yeah, sure.
In between groups all night long, getting creamed, getting just ripped apart.
Yeah.
And then just discovering that that's actually possible, walking out and being completely okay, almost as if you're not facilitating.
Yeah.
In between those times, you just walk back in. Facilitator's there. Facilitator does what he or she does.
Yep.
Walk out. Then the person's there who's got to be washing the dishes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, has to be done.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, Karen.
I'm thinking about what was just said, and it seems like for me there's kind of some energy in the body or sensations that may not feel too great.
That may not feel too great.
Yeah, or. Or there's some real energy there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering about that now, sort of.
You're talking about before you facilitate?
Or after.
Or after.
After, mm-hmm. really. I don't have time to think about it before because I just come home from work and boom.
Mm-hmm.
But after.
There's some energy there that feels uncomfortable.
And I heard from the retreat last year about the no reviews, so I've really tried not to do that and just let those sensations be there, or go swimming or go do something.
Yeah.
Just let it sort of disperse.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking that, you know, what would be the more pleasant energy, the real, you know, it feels like, okay, you know, is that with the facilitators, and it is my experience. I'm just wondering for other people what they, because to just, I'm trying to envision walking out and not having that.
Right, yeah. And I don't know if this is what you're pointing at, but it's a practice that it may not immediately be. That's why I said when Dave said, you know, don't think about it ever again after you walk out. Well, it's like don't think about the pink elephant in the room, right? I mean, we don't seem to have a lot of control, if you will, over what thoughts pass through, but we do have choices about how we engage with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that's what you're practicing, is that you finish facilitating and there's still some energy in the body, and that you're looking for ways like going swimming, things that actually support the being.
Or it could just be really energetic dishwashing.
Exactly. Exactly. Alex.
Yes, I love this topic. I think that it has application all throughout, like, my day.
Yeah.
Like, I watch how, you know, not rehashing the argument or the disagreement in some cases, you know, that I may have with someone could is really great practice for this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just not going over. Because I know this is not, I know what goes along with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a particular. It all it needs is a foot in the door,
right?
Really, and it will start going through everything.
So dropping conversation, period.
Dropping conversation, period. Yeah, that would be a really great place to start out when you're off the cushion,
right?
You know, like I think every moment is, but that is really that's been the place that I've been practicing with, and I find that that's helpful when I'm facilitating as well. I even do it like after I have I share in group. That never happened either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's why facilitating in life is just like the best.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm taking everything that I'm learning
mm-hmm.
and I'm just applying it everywhere.
Yeah.
So let me see. I was looking back at my own experience with it, and the biggest ones were, I'm asked to facilitate. There's a sit before the facilitation. You add the guide coming in.
Right.
You know, Sunday morning. Yeah. Who's listening.
Second time you've ever facilitated.
Exactly. So just to put it in the context.
Takes me right back.
I mean, it's just like, it's so funny what we'll try to commit. It's like, what did that person say then? And so trying to memorize, like,
yeah,
what the phrasing is going to be. And if that person says, I know, you know, it's
here's
like,
the story I can tell about the...
Yeah, exactly. Or there's a sense in the room, like, I sense in the room that someone's going to bring up this issue. what would the Buddha say? And it's just so not helpful.
There's a good voices cartoon in there. Set them up.
Just, it's such a big setup. And I think all we can do is keep showing up and keep applying the, you know, drop it. I mean, that's what the gift in this all, the whole thing is. It's just like pushing the eject button for the invader. Who's just going to try to keep getting in the seat.
Yeah. The skill to be able to drop it, I mean, that'll transform an entire life.
Yeah, because when that gets dropped, that just allows what's actually here to be here. Yeah. And that's why there's nothing really to learn or to or to accomplish or to do.
Yeah.
It's funny because that all that energy is constantly moving. It feels like it's constantly moving through me, and every time this comes in, it's just either a cap or it's a diversion.
It's like Dave was saying earlier, you know, in terms of, you know, what I've learned about being on the cushion, well, not that much, because there's not that much to say about it, there's not that much to learn. It's just like what we're doing in practice, in Buddhism, which is we're stripping away what gets put on top of it.
Yes.
Because when all of that is stripped away, there's really nothing to learn or to do on the cushion. There's just, like we were talking about before, there's just, okay, I'll hold the space right now.
Yeah, I'll hold the space.
It's complete by itself. There's nothing I need to do.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
And so how can I plan for that?
Right.
You know, it's spontaneous, premeditated spontaneity, that's what you should call it.
And conditioning hates that, you know, that... Wanting to plan to make sure that I can, so that I have the right answer, so that I
end
in facilitating. I mean, we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, what should we look at tonight?
Yeah, the one thing that I'm reminded of is this definition of Zen that says, Zen doesn't drag the last moment into this moment, and that's to me what we're practicing all the time is just leaving the last moment where it is and be in this moment, and that practice is, I think, for me, I'm sure, is what has saved my life over and over again, and. With you know, regards to facilitation, it's also that paradox too. You know, like we practice diligently. You know, we keep ourselves involved in practice, in the words of practice, in everything about our practice, and that's the only preparation there is.
Right.
Just
attention,
practice in life. Yeah, and yet without that. We wouldn't, you know, I mean, and this is part of it, all these things that we're doing. Without that, we wouldn't be preparing ourselves in that sense. I mean, that is the preparation.
Right.
And so, you know, then we facilitate, and it's just as we've been saying, then we facilitate.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, it's, you know, we used to say no second thoughts is the... another way of saying no reviews, you know, it's just over and it's done with.
Yep.
And I find I have a lot of energy, but it's good energy, you know, it's afterwards, I can get stuff done.
Right.
Afterwards.
Oh, cool. Maybe you facilitate tonight. I'll get to clean my house.
Exactly. Rather than, you know, I can go in being tired. I can go in being, Marie was saying, you know, not even barely keeping awake. Yeah. And then it's just that experience of being just right there on the cushion the kind of thing I say is just, you know, the intention is to let the universe, you know, come through me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
That's it.
And
and then whatever happens, happens. I have no control over it, mm-hmm. in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then I'm finished. Mm-hmm. I can just use this energy that's in
it's
there.
Just, and it really is such a good metaphor for life, isn't it? And then I just go back to where I came from and become the, you know.
Yeah, and have the results of the energy for till they last, and then it's the next moment and the next moment. There's nothing really in my life. That's that whole way we live in Zen practice is just the best. It's mm-hmm. just what makes life work, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. And it's the refuge. I mean, the ordinary, you know, the regular groups and stuff. Those are not an issue. Sometimes I have to do what would be akin to probably public speaking, but you know, bigger venues of things, and what I have to do is whenever there's something that's coming up that either is anxiety or whatever, is I do the same thing as I would do on the other end. I use the actual, you know, the there's the beginning of the conversation that feeling of it, mm-hmm. and that's what I train myself to go to the breath with, just mm-hmm. as after when we say no second thoughts, that's easy to say, but when the
use that conversation that wants to kind of get you nervous or whatever it is, you use that as a cue to just remember to come back here.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. even the beginning of it barely opens its mouth.
Yeah,
because if I let it open its mouth a little
bit,
you know, it's harder to close the door. Yeah. But just before, like if somebody was going to say, well, at that point. And the same afterwards. That's how I've learned to have the no second thoughts. Use that as the flag for them.
Yeah. Thank you. So I better check in with the book and see where we are.
We are headed to the kitchen.
Okay.
At least, I think Michael and I are going to go.
Okay. Do we want to do that, or do we want to just end, or what do we want to do? Should we call it good for now? I'm aware we still haven't gotten too terribly many. We've gotten a few tips out in the room. Anyone else have other, like, short tips? Because we could just pop around the room, and we don't have time to do a bunch of looking with everyone, but we could just pop around and do that. You want to do that? Okay. Mickey.
Just a little pre-one that actually had changed for me since the last facilitator retreat, which is when I'm going to be on the cushion, to dress in a monk-like facilitator way that mm-hmm. does not draw attention to me. So it's one way of getting that eye out of the way.
Yeah.
If I just show up in what I've been wearing during the day, I sometimes realize,
I'm still that person.
But if I take the time to say I'm facilitating tonight, I need to dress a little differently. It's part of the preparation.
That's great. Maybe brush the teeth, brush the hair. Tracy.
You know, this is, it's so funny, at the months of these key groups, I'm going like 3.5 months or 4 months, mm-hmm. and every time I show up, go like 15 minutes early, there's that little voice, and it's come every single week going, I hope nobody shows up. And
it's coming what?
I hope nobody shows up.
Oh, I know.
And I'm sitting there, and the first car drives up, and the automatic reaction is like, oh, good. It's funny. It's like, and it's becoming kind of comical. I just listen to it. And so just a tip, you know, when Sherry, someone told a story about this guy, and Sherry said, oh, isn't he cute? Yeah. Like, I thought, oh, like, what a great thing to bring into, like, oh, isn't that voice cute, you know?
Exactly.
It's just there. I don't do anything about it. I don't engage it. I don't even really pay, but it just pops.
It's just there.
The attitude of like, oh, let's sit.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
That's great. Mm. Michael.
I have a little stretching routine. It takes 10 or 15 minutes and just helps me physically to be on the cushion. And I think just the whole kind of ritual of it is really...
Kind of creating the space.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, Penny.
Sometimes when I'm facilitating and a distraction comes in, like a voice comes in to try to distract me, I just really focus on the face. Really focus on that face.
Uh-huh.
If I'm not facilitating someone, I'll sometimes just focus on the room, you know, or go back to my breath, but just
really turn attention away. Essentially, it's stop, drop, and breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
Turn attention away
yeah.
From the voice, not allow the distraction, and refocus on what I'm focused on.
Yeah, bring the attention to something that's actually here in the present moment. Mm-hmm. That's great. Jan?
Well, sort of piggybacking on what Nikki said and what Philip had said, for me, when the review starts, or a criticism, you know, whether I'm just about to facilitate after or just in life, is that for a while it was really difficult to just drop it and not sure it says something needs to come in, and if I mm-hmm. if the breath wasn't, I just wasn't able to do that, then a reassurance, and it just has been so practicing the reassurances on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's a nice point. That, you know, sometimes it's really available to me to just drop it, and that's great, but other times not so much. It's almost like something's needed to replace
it. It fills the space. I mean, for me, it's really visual, but it just comes in, and it's just like love moving in to get rid of that self-hate.
Fun. Yeah, so kind of like, you know, facilitation ends, and I choose what's going to be the reassurance that I'll bring in to fill that space if needed.
Yeah, and I haven't done that, but being in the habit of having a particular reassurance that's currently my favorite seems to, I don't even think about it.
It just comes in. Yeah.
It's like the mentor's right there, because we've already said we're not going to do that.
What's been really helpful for me is just to remind myself that it's not real serious. Mm-hmm. And just to be kind of lighthearted about it.
Yeah.
It's so much more fun. You know? Just kind of go with this lightness. And then what helped from the last retreat was just, it's okay to experiment. Mm-hmm. Like to know I might try something, and I know I'm going to get immediate feedback, and I just can step right back to reflective listening. Mm-hmm. And so, but it's okay to have that experience to say something and realize it didn't quite work.
Right.
But that's okay.
Yeah. And we've been looking at, too, it would be really supportive to assist people in seeing kind of where am I on in my facilitation practice. And for some people, you know, they know they're going to stick to reflective listening. For other people, they're working on branching out. And so giving yourself permission to, you know, experiment something, and then, you know, I'll get the feedback I get. And but knowing ahead of time, setting that intention so that there is the space for me to do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do anything really crazy, but you know, it's just, to me, it's like you can just see it the minute you lose them, and so it's real helpful, you know, and you just kind of go back to reflective listening. And the other thing is, I think I'm forgetting it, to remind myself that I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know what anything means, because I notice the process I do, like, you know, that thing about thinking you'd had a good facilitation, and like, you know, like one night a whole bunch of people came, and I'm like, all right, you know, this group's finally going to expand, you know, and it felt like it just went so well. And so the next week, you know, I'm thinking I got to get more cushions, and it's like one person came. I mean, it seems like whatever I think about the facilitation and what it's going to mean about whether they come next week is never true.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think they're going to come, they never do, and I think they're never going to come back, they come
they
every week.
Come.
That I just don't know what any of it means, and so, you know, to kind of just let go.
Yeah, exactly. You know, conditioning is trying back there trying to make a meaning, but I have no idea, so might as well just let that go.
Catherine?
Something I've done after the key group is, someone comes, is self-facilitate on the key reading. And I can do that because it's my living room, so, you know, it's not like a place I have to, you know,
go
shut up and go on. But, and I found that gets my mind total. I mean, there's no review there. And often the key is about what is, and we have no control, and, which just helps reinforce no review, and everything's fine.
That's great. It's kind of like Jan was talking about. It takes up the space of what, where conditioning will want to come in. Like there's no room for it. Tony.
One of the things that helps me kind of in between times, I made a facilitator reassurance tape. And I try to listen to it at different times, especially as it gets closer to time for my key group.
Very fun.
Yeah, it's been really helpful. And, I'll try, if I can, to also listen to either the facilitator CDs, either from the conference calls or the ones for getting out of the way.
Cool.
It's anytime kind of, I can listen, any even a part of them.
Yeah, it's another kind of putting on the clothing. It's like inviting the facilitator in deliberately.
Yeah. And not just 5 minutes before the group, you know, but to like it more of that as a way of life.
Exactly.
Kind of ongoing ways.
Yeah.
And I've even arranged my schedule so I can be home a little bit before, so I'm not just walking in the door. Mm-hmm. And I try to sit, because mine's a key group, it's not a sitting group, mm-hmm. so I try to at least sit 5 minutes mm-hmm. myself. And I'm sitting there usually praying. It's like, you know, that life lived through me, help me get myself out of the way, you know, and just help.
That's what I'm saying.
Not ruin anybody.
Great. Thank you.
It's kind of along with nothing means anything, but not to take anything personally. Something goes on, and if you know, it looks like maybe somebody's not happy or didn't have a good outcome.
Right.
It maybe doesn't really have anything to do with
anything.
That's
good, David. Yeah. You guys keep going. We're gonna go help out Alex.
Okay, I think we're probably closing in.
Yeah. Just keep going.
So this, along the same lines as what people have been saying, I noticed more so here at the monastery actually than at home. At home, I'm not quite sure if I have any rituals that I do, but here I've been noticing that both kind of pre and post, I've been just checking in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so on the way up to group, if I'm suspecting, you know, there's going to be an opportunity to facilitate, I'll just kind of check in and be like, okay, you know, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's... And also after, that's really helpful too, kind of like... it's like this deal in a way.
Yeah.
It's like I'll be here to begin with.
Yeah.
But don't forget that I'm also going to be here at the other side.
Yeah.
So there's all the, if there's any self-hate going on or whatever, there's still this kind of like little safe zone for whoever might be getting kind of picked on or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I have is about a year and a half ago or so, I came up with a paradigm through the Best Year Yet workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you can feel good about yourself no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a perfect thing for me to keep in mind, and I often do, kind of like no matter what transpires tonight, you know, so you take a risk and you try something new, whatever is going to go on it, you crash and burn, you have the greatest thing,
no matter what,
you can feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's kind of goes hand in hand with that kind of check-in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that little safe zone.
Yeah, really proving to yourselves that this is safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Two things. One thing that Sherry said that's always been helpful for me is we won't hurt anybody and we won't help anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And because everybody does their own work.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just there facilitating that, regardless. And then the other thing is, it's always good to remember that nobody's going to remember anything you said.
Exactly. We're completely fixated on it.
Yeah.
Everyone else is
like, what? Yeah. But they will remember their experience and who, what you're modeling.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's why, even if, in the early days she would tell us, even if you just sit there being present, you know, that's really all that's required.
That's the whole deal. That's what we're modeling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Before, wash, face.
Before, say it again?
Before, wash my face, my hands.
Uh-huh.
And my feet, if it's summer.
Very good. Can you say why that's helpful for you?
Because I feel clean.
Yeah. I mean, it truly does make a difference. I mean, it's back to the putting the clothing on, and it's supporting the person who's going to be sitting up here in front of the room.
Yeah, and it relaxes me. Doing those things relaxes me, make me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. So. That's great. Ramita.
I have a question about the chimes of going around the group at the end of group. Is that appropriate to talk about here?
Do you mean why do we do that? It's a kind of clearing the space thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we do it at the end of every day, kind of clearing, because there's a lot that happens in this room.
Yeah.
And it's sort of actually along the lines of other rituals people are talking about, of, you know, just making it fresh and new for the next day.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I have my group in my home. And,
To maybe institute that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another thing is, this is the first time I've seen the Kuan Yin statue here, and I'm just in love with it. And I thought, that would be nice to have. And then I said, that could be good for me as a facilitator to put somewhere I can see as a reminder. This is compassionate for all.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, a visual reminder.
One thing, and this is like maybe a little more for a sitting group, but I've just found it really helpful to make it as much like a monastery as possible. To try to recreate, to try to do, like, I'm just following the guidelines at the monastery and to try to set the way the room's set up and everything. And I remember years ago when I first went to Chris's group in Asheville, oh my gosh, I walked in there and I felt just like I was at the monastery. And some part of me believed that only existed here, you know? And I walked into that group and I was just like, I was just at the monastery.
And here I am in North Carolina.
Because it was real easy for me to believe I had to come here. I mean, you know, I don't know, it's just helpful to have it. You know, the privileged environment, all the details as much like the monastery as possible.
It's kind of the theme of what people are saying is there are all these ways to remind ourselves of, you know, what we're doing and where we want to be and where our attention is and, you know. All right, very good, thank you.